I was looking for it to be third.
You don't have enough patience, or what?
No, it just means we need to go
slower and get out of here.
Call the House Committee on Health Care to order for this lovely leap year day in February. Open an informational hearing. I've asked the PEB folks to come and give us a little tutorial on the upcoming Cadillac tax and what they're thinking about in terms of moving forward with dealing with that as an issue. And let me call what you call our first panel, which is one person.
Correct. It's Kathy Loretz, Director of the Public Employees Benefit Board.
Sure. I brought a friend.
More than one people. Good. Good. Thank you very much for coming. We appreciate it.
Sure. For the record, my name is Kathy Loretz. I'm the Director of the Public Employees Benefit Board, also known as PEB.
And for the record, I'm Mark Fairbanks. I'm a new board member for PEB, recently nominated for vice chair. And I'm also the chief financial officer for the Oregon Health Authority.
Great. Welcome.
Thank you. So you should have a PowerPoint. And then I also had passed out just some talking points. It's a two-page short list of some talking points about this as well, just for your information. There we go. So what we're going to cover today is some background about the excise tax and PEB's current status, how we plan to make changes in the premium ratios between the employee-only, employee-spouse and domestic partner, and the employee and family tiers. When you enroll in our benefits, you make a choice on tier. We're going to talk about that. And then our implementation plan to put us in a position where we don't have any sort of liability when it comes to the excise tax. In October of 2005, the board moved to modify the premium tiers, the relationships between the tiers I just talked about, the employee-only, employee and spouse, domestic partner, and employee and family, beginning in 2017. This will eliminate PEB's exposure to the excise tax liability by the time we hit 2020. And we're on schedule to make all those changes for January 1 of 2017. As we move forward, I'll begin to show you what those tiers are and how we're going to make the changes so that you can see how that all plays out. Okay? So as background, what is the excise tax? This is part of the Affordable Care Act, the ACA, and it calls for 40% tax on employer-sponsored health care whose premiums are above a threshold. Some people call it the Cadillac tax. It has been pushed off. The implementation date has been pushed from January 1, 2018 out to 2020. So we do have two more years to get in into the position that we want to be in. The purpose of the excise tax was to support the expansion of Medicaid and the uninsured, and it also supports cost-effective care and to reduce the current tax subsidization of really rich plan designs. The tax applies to both fully and self-insured plans, so PEB would be responsible as the sponsor of a self-insured plan. We would be responsible for any excise tax liabilities for the 76% of our members that are in a self-insured plan. We have several fully insured plans. If their premiums are above the thresholds, they would be responsible for the excise tax.
True that, that premium includes both the employer portion of the premium and the employee portion.
Chair,
combination of both of those.
Yes, Chair Greenlech and members of the committee, that's true. It also includes, we think it's going to include any FSA contributions, a flexible spending account, health savings account, or health reimbursement arrangement accounts as well. Okay. So it's the total premiums. So the thresholds that the in the ACA right now, at the maximum is a $10,200 annual premium for an employee-only tier. And for an employee family, it's $27,500. And like I said, we believe that this will include flexible spending accounts, health savings account, and health reimbursement arrangements. This threshold in the current guidance shows that there will be a 1% increase, CPI increase annually. And so currently, PEB's employee-only premium is well above the $10,200 annually. However, our family premiums are well below the $27,500. So we're kind of in a position right this very minute where one's above and one is below. I mentioned it, it was originally set to go into effect in 18, but now it's been pushed out. And final regulations, even for 2020, are not out yet. The guidance is not available for us. So we're making some educated assumptions as we move forward. So as far back as 2013, PEB began looking at the excise tax in conjunction with our consultants, Mercer Consulting, and came out to come up with a plan on how we could be in a position then 2018. So PEB sets our premiums based on a predetermined ratio between those tiers. I keep talking about the tiers, and those would be the employee-only, employee-spouse and domestic partner, employee and children, and employee and family. So those are what we consider our tiers. And there's a relationship between the premiums within those tiers. With PEB, our current ratios, the employee and family premiums, are 1.37 times the employee-only. So if the employee-only premium was a dollar, then if you covered your entire family, you would pay $1.37.
In this case, do you mean the premium or the part the employee pays?
Chair Greenlink, it is the premium, the total premium.
Total premium.
I'll always be talking about the total premium.
You set the total premium because you get a composite rate from the insurance companies?
Chair Greenlink?
Fully insured?
For PEB, the fully insured plans set their own premiums, but the self-insured plans, the ones that we would be responsible for, PEB sets those premiums using our Mercer sets those for us using our experience and cost of care and all those sorts of things.
And why do you use the predetermined ratio rather than using the experience? I assume it's an experience. I mean, the equivalent of an experience rated premium.
Mm-hmm. Chair Greenlink.
Why don't you use the experience? Why do you have a predetermined?
So, Chair Greenlink, we do use the experience. But when we distribute the premiums over the tiers, we use a ratio between them. Okay, so can we put that one on hold until we get to the next slide? Let me just finish this
Absolutely.
One slide here.
Yeah, if I confuse you or any of us confuse you, just tell us so.
Well, no.
Back off a minute.
Well,
no problem.
Thank you. Same with you.
We're very
flexible. If I'm confusing you, please keep asking me these questions. So for the family tier, when we talk about the ACA maximum, if you look at the employee-only premium maximum, it's $10,200. If you were to multiply that times 2.7, then you come up with what the maximum is for the family tier. So that's their ratio. As they say that the maximum that a family premium can be is 2.7 times more than an employee-only premium. And that's once you've set your premiums, okay? So now let's look at this one, avoidance of the tax. So PEP's premiums have long been designed to be what we call family-friendly, where the family tier only 1.37 times more than the employee only, even though there's at least three people in that tier, or three people in that policy. So our family premiums have been artificially kind of kept low, and this goes back as far as I can remember, back into the early 2000s, and that's always been that way. So if you look down at the chart there, our current ratios is an employee, and let's just talk a dollar. So if an employee-only premium was a dollar, then an employee and spouse or domestic partner premium would be $1.34, even though there's two people instead of one. Employee and children would be $1.15, and employee and family would be $1.37, even though there are three people being covered in that premium. So you can see that we end up shifting the kind of the burden of the premium onto the employee.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a question?
Yes, please.
So does employee and family mean employee plus partner plus children? I'm trying to understand the difference between employee and family versus employee and children.
Okay.
Two adults plus children?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Correct. So PEP's plan, moving on.
I really need to go back to what I was trying to press before. It's obvious here. These are arbitrarily determined, not based on the relative utilization.
Yes.
What's the actual relative utilization that would relate to these tiers?
I don't know the answer to that, Chair Greenlech. The relative relationship between the...
I'm asking when you look at the data rather than your magical mirror, whatever you're looking at, to get these, what's the relative ratio in the actual expenditures for an individual, an adult, and one child, a family? You must have actual experience in that.
Yeah, I'm sure our consultant has that, Chair Greenlech. I can get that for you.
And that's not something that you bother to use when you're considering these?
No.
No.
It's too rational.
Okay. Yes? Continue?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you follow the chart to the right, PEB's plan is to begin to change those relationships between the tiers to become more like the marketplace. So in 2017, we will be changing the tiers. So you can see it would be $1, $1.65, $1.40, and then $2. And then finally, in 2018, we would be at the 1, 2, 1, 7, and 2, 70.
And where do those numbers come from?
Chair Greenlech, the maximum for under the Affordable Care Act is 2.7. Your premiums for your employee and family can be no more than 2.7 times the premiums for an employee only. So we have, in 2018, we'll start at the 1, just like the ACA. Our maximum will be 2.7, and then we've picked some in-betweeners there for the employee and partner and the employee and children.
And how does that relate to those dollar amounts that you set?
Okay. No, actually, it's further on. So if we want to skip, should we just skip straight to that? So here's a chart that shows what our current premiums are.
Page 10.
I skipped one and went straight to 10. This, I think, will answer your question, Chair Greenlech. Slide 10. That you'll see in 2016, our premium for employee only is $14,000. That's annual. Our premium for an employee and family is $19,000. So the $14,000 employee only is way above the ACA maximum of $10,200. However, the employee and family is well below the ACA maximum of $27,500. Okay? So in 2017, if we redistribute the premiums so that they're more balanced between the employee only and the family, you'll see that the employee only premium will drop from $14,000 to $11,000 a year, and the family premium will go up from $19,000 to $22,000 a year. In 2017, the employee only will still be over the maximum, but as we move to 2018, we'll make one more change in that relationship. And employee-only premiums will be $9,000 below the maximum, and the employee and family will be $25,000 also below the maximum.
Chair?
Can I go?
Yes, please.
Thank you. I'm just wondering if you can explain the rationale behind that. I'm concerned about the impact on families. So you said it was not based on utilization, so I'm just wondering what the rationale was for that. Over time, employees with families pick up a higher amount, and a single employee without a family pays increasingly less.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm concerned about the impact on families and just wondering what the rationale is.
Sure.
Thank you.
Sure. Rep. Greenlick, Representative Kenny Geyer, and members of the committee. The rationale behind it is just to move to a more standardized tier ratio that looks like the marketplace. So that's really all it is. But now if we skip back to, but if we go back to slide 9, we have a plan to subsidize families up through 2021 so they are not harmed as they become settle into the premium change and get used to carrying more of the premium share in their tier. So PEB has arranged, beginning in 2017, with our first change in the tiers, out of our stabilization fund, we will subsidize any employees that are in the family tier so that their premiums would be the same as if we hadn't made the change. So they will not be harmed. We'll continue that up until 2019, and then we'll start to, in 2020, it'll be a little less than in 2021. So by 2022, we will no longer be subsidizing the families.
This produces on page 10.
Yes.
The same amount of total revenue?
Correct.
Except for the inflation, 3.4%.
Yes. The overall premiums will be the same. They will just be distributed differently over the different tiers. And that's done actuarially that determination is made by our...
You have the average cost per person in the calculation for these years?
I do not have that with me, Rep. Greenlick, but we do have that kind of information if you'd like to know what that sort of information
is. Well, I was wondering how it balances out. This is...
Cost per employee or per member, sir?
Well, you need to start with the cost per member, but you also need to know how many members you have for each of these rate bands. What's the average number of it? But I guess both those numbers would be interesting. How many dependents per employee do you have over the whole plan?
Rep. Greenlick, I believe that we have 2.4 is our family size. And
2.4 is the total average, including the... You have a total number of people covered and the number of employees, and I was interested in the relationship between the number of employees and the total number of people covered.
Sure. So, Rep. Greenlick, I believe we have about 38,000 employees and about 87,000 dependents.
So that 2.4 is the average across the whole, roughly
yes.
across the whole population.
Mm-hmm. So, Representative Greenlick. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry it's taking me a little while to get, but I think I got it now.
Thank you.
I think I understand more of the rationale. You're basically trying to keep your 2018 rates under the 10,000 limit at which you're going to get charged the big Cadillac tax, and you're trying to keep the employee and family under the 20, whatever that was, the number, 27,000. So I get that. I'm still a little concerned about families given the decreasing subsidy over time. So maybe that'll come up in the future slides, but... Yeah, okay, I got the first part of my question. Still a little bit concerned about the second part.
So, Chair Greenlick, Representative Kenny Geyer, that will be the case. When it's all said and done, families will be carrying a larger burden. They have mm-hmm. higher costs. They're, an employee only has one person in the policy, and a family only has at least three. So you are correct that will be the case.
Chair, can I follow up?
Yes, question? Please.
Did you also take into account looking at who you're guessing will be a part of this population at that point? Anyone who might come under the limit where their children might actually be covered by Oregon Health Plan and the CHIP program?
Chair Greenlick, Representative Kenny Geyer. PEP is always primary to that, so uh-huh. our insurance company, this insurance would always pay before CHIP or any government.
Well, the question is, would you put your family in if you could just take your employee-only benefit
right.
and cover your family somewhere else? I think that's the point.
Right, absolutely.
PEP would be primary in that circumstance because they wouldn't be members of PEP.
Well, Rep. Greenlake and Representative Kenny Guyer, there are rules around actively seeking, if you have OHP, actively seeking employer-covered insurance and taking it. So at the OHP side.
You may not be able to.
Yeah, that may not be in.
Yeah, but it might be possible in the marketplace to do better. Because you get a less comprehensive package in the marketplace. You could, for the subsidy, depending on what their family income was. You still have some employees in that are under the minimum wage. Good. Go ahead.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. So if we now move forward on to slide number 11. I'll show you kind of a run out of what the excise, the impact on PEB would be using our plan that we have in place. So this assumes a 3.4% increase in medical trend. It also includes FSA contributions, and we have some age and gender adjustments that we get through the ACA as well. But you can see that on the top row is if we don't make any changes, that beginning in 2020, we would have a $17 million excise tax liability that we would have to pay, and all the way through to 2027. It's quite large. If we do begin to make our changes in 2017 and 18, that by 2020 onward, we would have no liability at a 3.4% medical trend. The next slide shows a 6.0% medical trend, just to be on the safe side so we can show the good and the bad here. That on the top, again, it shows the same what our current the liability would be if we don't make any changes, so it's higher. And then the bottom row shows what our liability would be if we do make our changes. And making just the changes that I've talked about, we would be without any liability until 2025. And then there would be a $1 million.
That assumes there's no change in the federal limit, but the increase
Correct.
In inflation.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So our next steps, we have taken action to begin to make these changes so that we're in a good position beginning in 2020. We are concerned about the CPI index being 1%. Medical trend tends to be higher than 1%, so that may have an effect on us that we'll have to deal with in the future. But we do think that the board has put into place a plan that will protect us for the next 10 years. And as always, we'll continue to monitor the guidance that comes out of the ACA as we move forward. And I'd be happy to answer any more questions.
Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Chair Greenlake.
Representative Bueller.
A couple of questions. Good plans. Good plans are great, but sometimes they seem to have some complications of their own. You've very briefly mentioned the FSA accounts. I would like to three questions, if you could address them, and I'll just give them to you, and then you can answer them. I'm not seeing much mention of health savings accounts, health flex spending accounts, or health reimbursement accounts, or 125 health accounts, all of which help for whether a public employee or not, families to be able to access health care. The first three are specifically called out in the ACA. The Section 125 health accounts are still being debated in Congress, I believe. So that's the first question. Where is the tie-in with them? These are a significant part of what people do to minimize cost of health care, use a savings account. Employees can deduct about a 30% benefit by going through some of these plans. So I'm concerned about that. And then another portion is, it seems to be what you're suggesting is that the public employee unions will be just fine with decreasing the single person health benefit by one-third and saying they're okay with that in collective bargaining. We're not going to backfill that with anything, even though we're taking $5,000 a month out of your health premium and putting it over to families. Are we sure that they're going to agree with that, or are we going to be looking at, from a legislative perspective, how do we pay back the family, the single family or the single person that just got their health insurance premium as part of their collective bargaining, for example, cut by one-third? I mean, because premiums now are $14,000, by 2018, those premiums will be $16,000, and you're going to roll those all the way back to $10,000 without compensation to those employees. I'm unclear on how that's going to go smoothly.
Okay. Chair Greenlight, Representative Hayden. So first I'll say, well, I'll start, we'll just do them in order. PEP does have a flexible spending account available to members with a maximum amount you can put, for health care. I think it's $2,550 you can put into a flexible spending account. So we have one of those, and we also have a commuter account that allows you to put pre-tax dollars into an account to reimburse yourself for non-pre-tax parking and bus passes, train passes, stuff like that. So we do have those. We don't have any plans that include a health savings account or a health reimbursement account. Currently, none of our plans have those. And whether or not those would be put in would be something that the board would decide, and currently we don't. We have standard plans with a flexible spending account available.
So a follow-up question on that.
Mm-hmm.
If a person is rolled back to get under $10,200 and within their family structure they have a health savings account, on top of that, would they not be then taxed for that health savings account at 40% just because the individual premium gets below it? Aren't they looking at a tax liability there?
Chair Greenlick, Representative Hayden. You know, I don't know the answer to that. I don't think so, because the FSA, inclusions is included in the maximum, but the ACA maximum. But I'd have to find. I'm not a tax expert, so I can find that out for you.
But that would count towards that additive $10,200, correct?
It's yes, sir. It is included in that, and we included that in it in our calculations in, as well that are in here, the $2,500. Okay. So then talking about the union aspect of this, the PEP board is made up of four union representatives and four management representatives. So the unions have been involved in the development of this plan. So for PEP, we have two SEIU members. We have one member from AFSCME and one member from the American Federation of Teachers. And so they are were involved and are aware of this this plan that we have in place. Currently, I believe that the collective bargaining agreements don't speak to the actual premiums. They speak more to the percent that the members would pay towards their premiums. That's all I can tell you about those.
Follow up on that.
Sure.
Chair Green, thank you. So follow up, for example, for our higher education system, we passed, we put the HEC in place so that these universities could go out and negotiate better deals, right? Perhaps on the open market for various things that they do. And I believe, although I wasn't here at the time, that was for health care. And then, when I say we, the legislature went in and said, no, we're going to draw health care out of that, so the higher education the universities cannot go out and negotiate their health care package. It seems to me like what you're doing is rolling a health care package, and it was even mentioned that you're trying to get a health care package to look more like the open market or the out on the street, what they can get there. So here's a follow-up question. Is part of the negotiations to allow the public employees or the higher education committees to go out and negotiate on that open market if they can get a better premium, a better health care coverage for their employees?
Chair Greenlake, Representative Hayden,
PEP doesn't get involved in any sort of negotiations when it comes to union negotiations. We're not involved in any of the collective bargaining agreements, and I am not aware of what the universities would do in that case, whether or not, I mean, that's not...
You're not aware that they can't go out and negotiate this on their own?
Sir, I thought that they could. I thought that they were allowed to pull out of PEB if they so desired, but...
Well, I believe that's incorrect.
That's good news for us.
But you might be thinking of OAP.
It is. PEB is one of the options, but there are other options. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
President Buehler?
Yeah, a few questions of clarification. Thank you, Chair Greenlee. I'm a little confused on who sets the premium and why were those ratios set the way they are currently. Doesn't the marketplace set those premium levels? How can the purchaser set those premium levels?
Chair Greenlee, Representative Buehler. In PEB's case, those ratios go back, like I said, to the beginning of time. I was with PEB in 2003, and they were in place then, and I believe they were in place when PEB started in 2000, the same ratios that are in place now. We set our own premiums. For the self-insured plans, we set our own premiums, and then with our fully insured partners, we tell them what ratio we'd like them to use when they set their premiums.
Your composite rate.
The composite rate is developed off of all of the premiums, correct.
So can I follow up on that? Yeah. So what happens if the insurers don't want to agree to that ratio?
Chair Greenlee, Representative.
They don't
Buehler.
Care. They take the average rate that they want and use a formula that'll put it in any composite formula.
Okay.
It's irrelevant. They come out with the same average. I mean, they know how much they want to get out of the group.
They get a lump sum.
Yeah.
And then you divide it up.
They do.
That's why I'm confused about the table on page 8, because I think it really relates to the question you're asking.
Yeah.
So, Chair Greenlee, the excise tax, avoidance of the excise tax on 8, we are only talking about today the self-insured plans.
I understand that, but I'm having trouble with what the one means. It's really critical for understanding the table to know what one means in this case. Where does one come from?
It's the standard.
It's the standard, I guess you would say. The standard mm-hmm. is that...
No, I mean literally. How do you figure out what one is?
Mm-hmm. Oh, you mean actuarially?
Yeah, you have... Well, I'm not even talking about doing it actuarially. I'm talking about let's go back to last year. It seems to me you have an average per member, a number that you can get. You know how much your total expenses were. You know how many members you had. You have an average per member. That's not this one. This one is something else. Is it simply the quadratic equation of the four factors and the people they're in to come back up to one? I mean, because one is different than each of those four categories. It has a different relative meaning. Where does one come from?
Representative Greenlee and committees, as I studied this, I think the main thing is the one, I think, is a marker for the ACA establishing the employee only.
Forget the ACA.
And then they, well, basically...
Let's just talk about this year. This year, the ACA doesn't apply. Where did the one come from?
But I believe that's exactly for the purposes of this chart. For the purpose of this analysis, that's where it comes from, because everything starts with whatever you've established for your employee-only coverage. And from there, you have the thresholds go to 2.7. Yeah. And I think maybe what gets to your question, perhaps, might be the same question I have for management, for my seat as a new board member, and that's really we're talking about the relative premium. So the number one thing is the relative premium for the single, and then these multiples, I think, are a matter of policy.
No, I agree. I'm talking about the very simple question of calculation of how you get to one, because one's not the average, one is something else. What is one?
The best I understand it, Representative Greenlee, as frustrating as it may be, is that one, in my mind, is what is the employee-only premium. That's what one is.
Here. It doesn't come from God. It comes from a calculation. I mean, I don't think God said one.
Yeah, so it would be from Mercer's
$200 a day.
It would be from a month. From Mercer's actuarial determination of the premium.
For a single person.
And Chair Greenlee, to come up with one, they do use all of the experience that we have. They look at the cost of care. They make assumptions about the cost of care going forward. And they come up with that.
You have a relative number of people in each of these four categories. I mean, an actual number of people.
Yes.
An average number of people per year. And you have an average cost per year for the total population. And you need to divide that so that once you've established one and you multiply these other rates by the population, it comes up to the total number of dollars you need to have.
Yes.
So one comes from a number. Mm-hmm. It's not automatic. There's no way to say, okay, let's start with $200, and then we multiply that by 1.15, then we multiply that by 1.37, and we have some numbers. Those numbers may not be the total number of dollars that you need for the population.
I
was wondering what the real one is.
I get your point.
That's what you were.
Yes, I get your. Yeah, I get your more sophisticated point. I suspect the one was divided by the amount of total money you have to qualify under the ACA and not go over the excise tax limit, and then they work back to one, as I suspect.
Well,
going forward,
you had to get
true.
One before you were worried about the excise tax.
Yes.
You get one every year because you have to use that to get.
Yeah, but after this year, it looks like it's. It's
I'm
more,
not worried about where we go next. I'm worried about where we go now. Because we do need to go where you go next because the one changes.
Right. So,
as a proportion of the total expenditures.
I suspect this year's one is generated on actuarial data for how much it costs to provide services to one individual. But after 16, it looks like it's a constructed one. To be below the threshold of the tax kicking is what
now.
It looks like to me. Because it drops, and you know the cost of delivery of care to the one is not going to drop substantially. So it's a
I think I know what the formula is.
Yes,
it's
I
one
do
times
too.
The number of people in that category plus 1 point. Where's the next number? Plus 1.34 times the number of people plus one. And then you have a sum of weights.
And they have to all add up.
Yes.
They have to add up. You come to an average, and that brings you back to what the one is, which
that's
isn't.
Right.
It's not what we usually think about. The expenditure is not two. The expenditure is not 2.7 times one. It's the sum of all those weights.
That's right. I get. Yeah. That's what I was trying to get at too.
But then, so I mean, that's why I'm trying to establish that is. Then how do you keep that same ratio as the one changes as you go forward? How are you sure that when you're done? I mean, I suppose Mercer knows how to do that. I was wondering if we could have a table that had the number of people in each of those categories times the average cost for each of those categories.
Yeah.
That would then come up and
see
how
I'd like to
works.
See that.
I think that's what I'd like the underlying table. Yeah. Because you can't get there by simply, I mean, you can't just change those weights and expect it to work out. Because it may not work out.
Yeah.
But they must have done that.
Yeah.
We can bring something back. Chair Greenlee, we can bring something back to you.
Or the sensitivity analysis, if these weights, according to the four different types of employees, doesn't work out. So this is structured to work if you have a predictable number of people, employee only, employee and child, employee and spouse. But if you miss that, you could miss your targets, and then the tax would kick in, or not.
Yeah,
so there are certain expectations of how many
sensitivity
people,
to the mix in the tier.
The sensitivity analysis of each of those tiers of people.
It relates to the number of people in each of those rate bands.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Representative Wiley?
Mr. Chair, you woke me up.
There you go.
So when you started talking about this, because it's something that I think is a big problem actually in the healthcare industry, and I wonder, because we're talking about figuring out what one is, and a lot of people are just kind of curious what costs are. So I would wonder if there's any way PEB could possibly get us what the actual cost of every procedure is and things like that, and kind of breaking it down, because the healthcare industry is the one thing you go in to get seen and you have no idea what something costs.
They don't get costs, so they only get charges. 10
people. Right. Yeah. 15,
that's all you see 20, is like a charge.
But that's all they'll have is charges. They won't
they'll
have
just have
costs.
Charges. So I think
either way, right?
If we really wanted to get after the cost of healthcare, if we just published what things actually cost and itemized those out on every receipt, we would see a big change in the industry. So, because it's unique that we've kind of went into
this. This is the way you get when you buy a car. You get the actual true cost of building the car, right?
Yeah. Well, when you have all your add-ons.
Maybe not.
But everything added on, extended warranties, all of the other stuff that you put on, I mean, you'll see that, but
I believe
you have that
stickers.
Base price of the car, and then it itemizes everything out after that.
That base price is a price, not a cost.
So, no, you don't actually have the cost.
Same as a doctor.
I'm saying your price. What is the price? I'm not asking what the cost
they
is.
They'll have prices. They won't have costs. That's what they have is price. They get a bill.
Yeah.
Or their third-party administrator gets a bill.
Because if you had knew the price from every different provider out there, it would change things a bunch.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, I am going to assume that you've taken the population in each of these categories times the 1.01 whatever to 1.7, 2.7, and that gives you the final total, and that you would adjust it as you go forward if your demographics change a lot. I think I want to get back to the concern I had originally about the decreasing subsidies for families who are paying a higher premium, assuming that they have a share in their premium costs, and so mm-hmm. that's going to be a harder hit on families. Can you tell me a little bit about your stabilization funds? You're using that to help subsidize, and that's decreasing over time. I'm assuming that stabilization funds are something like your reserve, your funds, so that you can even things out. Can you explain a little bit about where that comes from, what percent that is, how healthy that is, and can that be used beyond 2021 to continue to increase subsidies and some of the conversation you've had with labor around that?
Sure. Chair Greenlick, Representative Kenny Geyer. Our stabilization fund is just that. It is our reserves, and statute is called a stabilization fund. It is healthy right now. We will be losing some of it at the end of 2017 back into the salary pot per legislation. We'll be losing $120 million. But it will still be in a position where we can easily do this. It increases. We have a small amount of money that comes in there. Any money that is forfeited from FSAs or people that opt out of our insurance. So we have a small amount of money that goes in. Used to increase a lot more when the interest rates are a little bit better. But I think right now we have about $350 million in there. And that is for ourselves. Like I said, we have about 76% of our employees are self-insured, and so we need to have that as our reserves to cover the cost of care in case there is something that happens.
Chair, can I ask a follow-up question? Thank you. And who manages those investments for you? Is that done through the treasurer?
Chair Greenlake and Representative Kenny Geyer, yes. It's just in a savings account.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair Greenlake. So and the stabilization fund is generated from what sources of revenue? Is it from premium revenue?
Chair Greenlake, Representative Bueller. Yes, like I said, we have some small funding increases. If we, in fact, with our self-insured plans, people use less care than the premiums that we set, that money would go into our stabilization fund. However, if our premiums were lower than the cost of care for the year, then we would use the stabilization fund to cover those costs.
Follow up. for your projections, what's your expected rate of return in the stabilization fund that you build
nowadays? Yeah.
Chair Greenlick, Representative Bueller, you mean as an interest?
Well, I'm sure you have actuary assessment of how much you need in the stabilization fund. What's your projected rate of return on the invested assets of the stabilization fund when you make those projections?
So it is just in a interest-bearing savings account. It's not invested in any sort of market or anything like that.
And why is that? Why is it in that kind of fund?
No, I don't know the answer to that. I'm sorry. It's never been invested.
You can't afford to take a loss on your reserve.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's got to be... I bet there'd be better.
I'll say for the public record that also surprised me when you said that, and that it seems to be an area of creative thinking in the future. When you think about our PERS account and other things, yes, it takes ups, but I mean it takes downs, but there's also over time.
These are reserves to pay bills.
Right.
I mean, it's not. Like
yeah, but I bet you could even get insured.
SP, just yes. Drop a little,
I bet you could even. Yeah, but. You could get insured
going to
bonds.
Affordable housing.
Yeah.
Some of those going to affordable housing.
That might be something
to. It
does
need to be fairly liquid.
Yeah.
In case something happens. I can find that out.
So, clarify for me how much the cost would go up without the subsidy from the stabilization fund. How much to the policyholder?
Oh, okay.
Would double for a family.
Heavy.
On slide number 8, Representative Bueller,
uh-huh.
Chair Greenlake, it shows kind of what the stable, what the, it's like $15. It's not a considerable amount of money.
$15 a month?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the subsidy is not
a subsidy.
It's not,
you mean when it goes from 1.37 mm-hmm. multiplier to 2.74 multiplier, it goes up $15 a month? No.
Mm. Representative. Chair Greenlake, that is the member share. We need to remember that the employees pay 1-5% of the premium.
Right.
What percent do they pay?
Either 5% or 1%, depending on the plan that they choose. So $15 would be an average that we would pay to subsidize their 1 or 5% premium.
And what percentage of their increase would that $15 cover?
100%.
100%.
Uh-huh, for the first few years until we started to tail down.
That cannot be correct.
You're talking about just cover the increase on their 1 to 5% premium. You're not talking about the whole premium.
Correct.
That's
right.
All
no
they pay.
Yeah, but the full family cost has to be something like $1,000 a month.
Oh. Chair Greenlake, employees pay about $75 a month for a family for their 5% of them.
And why wouldn't that become $150 since you're doubling the relative proportion?
Okay.
Before they were paying at a relative rate of 1.37, which depends on the numbers, but now they're going to be paying 2.70.
Chair Greenlake, over time, yes.
Over
yes.
time.
Yes.
And
but
if it's $75 a month now, it can't be $80 a month 4 years from now when they have it twice the proportion. Unless I completely misunderstand these numbers.
Well, and to follow on that, why is the subsidy decline from 2019, 2020, 2021?
Chair Greenlake, Representative Bueller, the board wanted to tail it off so that at the end the family tier was being fully paid by the employee.
By the employee, but isn't that going to be prone to collective bargaining agreements? I mean,
mm-hmm.
So how safe is that assumption?
I can't answer that question other than to tell you that we do have representatives on the board from the large unions in the state, and they have approved this plan.
Here's big issue. That
so
we really need to have some confidence that whatever you're doing keeps us really inside the excise tax limit, or that we think about how much extra money we need to put into PEB in order to keep you whole after 2020. So we're just poor legislators here trying to struggle with these hard ideas. But it would, as a result of this conversation, I haven't gotten confidence that these magic numbers are actually going to work. And I'm not, it would be very useful if we could find a way for us between now and the 2017 session that we have the ability to have a clear understanding for what's happening. And I don't sense we do. So it would be really helpful if we think about how to go forward in a way to make sure some of us have had experience with state agencies not quite having their plans come out the way they intended to be, so we get a little nervous about it. So I would hope we can find a way to have some understandings along between now and... Because we're getting proposals for things like take PEB to a defined contribution plan rather than a defined benefit plan on the assumption that we can't get under this limit. I'm reluctant to move in that direction, but that means we need to have confidence in the numbers.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Kenemer, you've been quiet too. Why don't you
just to add to this, I guess I have I'm probably more confused than when we started with this. And so I go back to kind of what the basic costs are, but I'm also worried about the ongoing cost over time making these adjustments. And it's not just to families, but it's just to us overall total in paying these benefits. And I don't see anything here, whether it's collective bargaining agreements or not, anything here that's addressing or trying to anticipate what those are. And for me, it would be much more helpful if I had some understanding about that risk, I guess, and all these adjustments and what the risk is from a standpoint of the total costs end up and who's responsible for those total costs.
Yeah.
And what I've heard here, I guess, if the employees, right now, what the agreement is, they only pay 1 or 5% of what that premium is. Somebody's got to pay the difference, and that somebody is us. Yeah. So I guess I need to understand some of those aspects too.
Somebody right now is what comes out of the reserve.
Yeah.
Well, that's just to mitigate the cost going up.
Yeah. Sure.
Am I confusing it more?
No, it seems to me what we need to have is the annual expected average premium over the next few years. And I was going to ask the question, what's the relationship between the fully insured premium and the self-insured? You must have that.
Can you say that again for me, please?
What's the relative? How does the... You have some fully insured premiums and the self-insured. I was wondering, and one of the questions is, what's the relationship between those now and how might they change over time?
So Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, there is within our budget note the expectation that PEB keep their ongoing increases at 3.4% or below. And so we are working diligently to stay below that. We were able to do it in 2016, and we're in the middle of our renewals for 2017 now. So that is our goal. And when you look at the different premiums that we have available for our members, the most expensive plan is the Kaiser HMO, which is fully insured, followed by a self-insured plan, the statewide plan. And then the other plans that we have available are less than that. The PEB statewide plan and All Care PEB down in the three counties, Jackson, Josephine, and Curry, those are our two least expensive plans. So our self-insured plans tend to be less expensive than the fully insured plans do.
Representative Buehler?
Maybe what would help me is just highlighting some of your key assumptions in the modeling and then a sensitivity.
Okay.
range of what would happen. You know, for example, if there wasn't this acceptance of the changes in the monthly subsidy, what would that look like over time?
Okay, thank you.
That's just one example.
Mr. Chair.
Can you go here?
Okay, thank you.
Darn it.
Okay, so I'm trying to grasp onto this and understanding more and more as I go. And I think that the whole premise of this is to keep us out of having to pay the Cadillac tax. And whether how much of it goes toward premiums, toward families or employees or whatever, you're making sure you're looking at the demographics and making sure that you have the total amount that you need and that the state needs to pay the premiums. If you go to page 10, the difference between employee and family in our current versus a couple of years from now in our adjusted tier ratio is $6,000. That's $500 a month. I was more concerned until I realized that families only pick up 1-5% of that. So that really does bring it down. 500 a month, 1% of that is $5 a month, more than covered by your initial subsidies. But the 5% is $25 a month. And so those people are the ones that come out short, but not a huge amount. So once I started dividing it down into that, I started feeling a little more comfortable with this. I just want to say for the record that I really want to be careful about families, employees with children, and I don't know. I didn't see any subsidy for employees with children. So the difference between what I thought they were going to be doing over time, once I realized the small percent that they pay into it, mm-hmm. is not as big as I initially thought it would be. But I just still want to see, in terms of how you make decisions going forward in the demographics, that we make sure that this change in the burden doesn't fall unfairly on families.
$500 a month is not the full family cost.
Well, I'm just taking the $6,000 a year between the current tier ratio and the adjusted tier ratio. So the premiums for the employee and family are going up by $6,000, which is $500 a month. But the employee...
That's the average cost per employee. If you look at the family rates particularly, by doing it, it's going to be way more than $600.
Is that right?
Well, it has to be. Because
I'm looking at $6,000 increase. I'm not looking at the total. I'm saying that the plan, that the burden on employee and family premium is going up by $6,000, which is $500 a month. The burden on the employee, him or herself, divided, if it's only 1%, that's only $5 out of $500. And if it's 5%, it's $25 a month. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes.
So the amount, the increased amount that a employee is going to have to pay if he or she has a family is not as great as I originally thought once you said the 1 and 5%. So thank you for that. That's making me a little more at ease. I just want to say in principle,
sure.
I want to be very careful going forward when we shift the burden more to families, to the extent that employees are picking up that cost at all, and to the extent that we're either subsidizing it or not. I just want to put that on record. It's taking me a little while to understand piece by piece.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think I have that correct now.
I have it correct.
Okay. Yeah. I should just like be quiet.
Mr. Ryden?
I'll pass, Mr. Chair. We need to get to the floor and cast some votes.
2:30, right?
I thought it was 2.
Is
it
2:30?
2:30? I guess I should listen to Representative Krieger, who's sitting beside me then.
Is that right? Isn't
it 2:30.
It's 2:30.
Okay. Well,
you pass.
I'll pass.
Yeah.
You lost your chance.
I fumbled.
Let's keep these conversations up. And if you could provide information on an ongoing basis, it would be very useful.
Sorry to keep on asking questions. But,
no, go ahead.
So are similar... tier ratios being done for OEB also, or do you have knowledge of what's being done there?
Chair Greenlake, Representative Bueller, I don't know what OEB is doing. I'm the director of PEB. If you'd like information on that, we can certainly find out for you and get you the information that you need. Is that a yes, please?
OEB and ask them to do it.
Hopefully they are going through this creative thinking as well.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming in.
Sure.
Well, maybe be able to ask more intelligent questions as we go along. It might be helpful if we get more familiar.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Close informational hearing. And I think we're done for this session.
So I tried to do a bill a couple years ago, 3 years ago.
Is it Kenny Geyer?
Yes.
We're just giving you some information. I think we're done for this session.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you all for your work. We'll be back in May.
Thanks for you and Sandy's hard work. We really appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you.
It's
so
a pleasure.
Much.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you for making sure we're always on time.
I must say you're one of the finest chairs that I've worked with in this building. So.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Woo!
I think you're right.
Well said. Let's go.
Say the most modest chair.
We have adjourned shiny die.
He didn't say the most. Say the most.